Welcome to the Generations Radio Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director for Christian Home Educators of Colorado, but also a pastor and a father of five, and I broadcast from my basement out here in Elbert County, Colorado, a safe distance from the fall of Western civilization, and we're certainly seeing that happen under the auspices of now Barack Obama, inaugurated as President of the United States, what, just a day or two ago. And I think, Dave, they spent more money on his coronation than any other president in the history of this country.
More money by far,
yeah.
And it was a coronation.
And the timing was perfect for spending that money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the market is in the tank, and economy's in shambles. So, yeah, by all means, let's bring out the gold and the gems, and let's throw it to the pigs there.
Yeah, exactly. And Dave, you know, and there's no question about it, this nation is making a shift more towards socialism, Marxism. Barack Obama was the most pro-infanticide candidate ever to run for president of the United States. I would expect euthanasia to come. That's the direction we've set as a nation. We want to kill. We like killing babies. We have since 1973. And, of course, he was the most pro-infanticide on the Born Alive baby bill that came in the Illinois legislature several years ago, much more liberal than even Ted Kennedy or Nancy Pelosi or any of those guys on infanticide. He's also said again and again and again he likes the redistribution of the wealth. In fact, thinks that redistribution of the wealth should have been the Constitution of the United States. And that's a quote. You can hear that on YouTube. It's up there. Just type in Marxism and redistribution of the wealth, and you're going to find that Barack Obama wants redistribution of the wealth to be in the Constitution of the United States, which is difficult because Marx hadn't really written his Communist Manifesto until, 60 years after the Constitution of the United States was penned. But that was too bad as far as Barack Obama was concerned. We are most definitely moving towards more of a Marxist socialist nation.
So we should put the redistribution of wealth in the Constitution and take out the natural born clause for presidents.
Well, yeah.
So it would be almost the same number of words.
A couple of amendments there, and everything would be just fine for good old Barack Obama. Now, President of the United States, and by the way, also, he has announced that he will impose massive inheritance taxation upon American families. He is committed to abolishing the family and family economies by taxing as egregiously as possible the inheritance of families across this nation. He's already announced that, and he has also announced an $850 billion increase in his spending bill for to salvage the economy by putting more money into 21st century schools or something like that.
Yeah, spend your way out of debt.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring out one more issue before we take a break here, and that is Professor Olson from Temline University School of Law analyzed the 2008 presidential election, and he found a couple things. Number one, the number of states won by Democrats were 19. Republicans won 29 states, so way more states won by Republicans. Square miles of land won by the Democrats, 580,000. Republicans won 2,427,000 square miles. Now, this is according to county, okay, according to county. The population of counties won by the Democrats were 127 million, Republicans 143 million. And but also the murder rate per 100,000 residents, this is key. Murder rate per 100,000 residents in counties won by Democrats were 13.2. They had a murder rate of 13.2, Democrats did, and the Republicans 2.1 per 100,000. So the murder rate of Democrats, Democratic counties, approximately six times that of Republican counties.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah, I know. Here's Professor Olson again. Says, in aggregate, the map of the territory Republican won by Republicans was mostly land owned by the tax-paying citizens of the country. Democrat territory mostly encompassed these citizens living in government-owned tenements and living off various forms of government welfare, and may I also say, probably federal government jobs. So, you know, when the government is controlling 25 to 30% of the gross national income, and they're hiring those people, you bet they're gonna vote for the guys most likely to increase the coffers of government.
You know, when our framers had this little idea that if you owned land, that was your net contributor because you paid taxes. That was the people who could vote, and those who were net receivers didn't receive a vote. You know, if we were to enact that today, if we were to change our Constitution around a little bit, not to the redistribution of wealth part, but saying that you must be a net contributor to taxes, not a net receiver, and only the net contributors could cast a vote, Obama would have lost in a landslide.
Yeah. Well, folks, so we're going to talk a little bit about the drawbacks of democracy and what's happening in this country in just a moment. But first of all, a couple of comments. One is that the Democrats, if you look at the red-blue by county map of the United States, you're going to see that the Democrats, the blue states, are typically cities. Democrats win the cities. Democrats win Denver, and that's why they win Colorado. Democrats win Atlanta, Georgia. Democrats win the St. Louis area in Missouri. That's why they win a good portion of Missouri. Democrats win the large cities, and that's why they win elections. Cities, by and large, of course, are the cesspools of vice, debauchery, corruption. Dave, you think about the most corrupt cities in America and corrupt areas in America in terms of politics. What do you think of?
Oh, Chicago.
Well, there you go, Chicago. And by the way, our new president of the United States came from Chicago.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, they sold off his seat. They auctioned it off.
Yeah. Well, cities, by and large, folks, are the cesspools of vice, debauchery, corruption, homosexuality, welfare dependence. And why is that? Well, of course, that's because Cain, the city of man, is built by Cain. Cain goes out and builds a city, kills his brother, then builds a city. Babel builds a city and makes a name for themselves. That's what man does. He builds his large cities, and then he makes them the cesspools of all kinds of vice, homosexuality, and welfare dependence. That's what Rome did. That's what Greece did. That's what Egypt did. That's what Babel did. That's what empires do. They build large, large cities, and they debauch them. And then, of course, eventually they lose character, and then those empires fall apart. But, Dave, I think that cities mean anonymity, that men just doesn't want relationships. They become vagabonds in the earth. They build their cities. And they want to get lost in the crowd. Now, the reason why men want to get lost in the crowd is because they don't want spiritual accountability. They want to hop from relationship to relationship. They don't really want to get to know each other, because getting to know each other means to get to know yourself, and other people are going to get to know yourself, and then you're going to know about you're a sinner, and they're going to know you're a sinner, and that's not going to be fun. And people hop from relationship to relationship, from divorce to divorce, and the shack-up rate is through the ceiling. And they often hop from church to church, and they often get involved in mega churches and so forth because they don't want relationships. They willingly walk away from relationships. They don't want that spiritual accountability that occurs in small cities. Dave, you think about this. If there is a homosexual in, say, the city of Elbert, which has about 100 houses there, people know each other. Everybody knows each other, so everybody would know who the homosexual is. And, of course, the homosexuals don't want to be in small little towns and burgs where they're identified. They don't want that. Everybody knows each other there. They'd rather be in a large city where they're lost and they're anonymous and nobody really knows who they are or what they're doing. And they're not in spiritual accountability or moral accountability to anybody. They love to live immoral lives, and they don't want to really get to know each other, because if you got to know each other, they know that they were sinners.
Well, Kevin, if you look at the cities, you'll right away notice some things. That's where the taxes are the highest. People are taxed more in the cities. Apparently, they need more service because they can't do things for themselves. Property values are the highest because land is locked and it's at a premium. So you have a higher expense of living. But families are practically non-existent. It's a horrible place to raise children. Churches, the ratio of churches to bars, this is a good way of putting it. In the cities, the ratio of churches to bars is very, very low. Far more bars than churches. And the churches that are there are not well attended. Maybe they're old and historic. But by and large, the ratio of churches and to bars is very low. But you get out in the country, in the urban areas, and you'll find every little town has at least three churches.
Yeah.
But maybe only one or two bars.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Good point. Of course, there's a lot of welfare dependency in the big cities, and this is because you've got 70% of inner-city kids born without fathers. Fornication is through the roof. People sin in cities. They sin all the time in cities. And in 2 to 3 generations, after all that fornication, that homosexuality, the character of the city degrades. And then there's all these fractured families who become welfare dependent. Ladies and gentlemen, it's simple. It's simple. Cities eventually corrupt the people that live in them, especially the very, very large cities where there's very little accountability and where people who haven't lived there for a long time really gotten to know each other and develop good, solid community in those cities. And you're not seeing that in the modern cities anymore. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to live in cities, but you've got to develop the right worldview, like right perspective of city life, of community life. And people today live in very cold institutional lifestyles where they don't really know each other in their own neighborhoods. They don't know each other in their own families because they send their kids off to the institutions to get processed in the meatpacking plants called public schools, and they don't really know each other. Their teachers never really get to know them very well. They never get discipled. And so people live outside of relationship and outside of spiritual accountability in churches and families and communities. And in the end, you wind up with these large cities where people vote Democrat and want to support as much welfare and homosexuality as they can possibly support.
Well, if you were to be a thief, say, a city would be a good area because there's a lot of targets there. And you're anonymous, so you can make your heist and you can kind of blend into the crowd. Then everybody starts fearing the thief. And so people become even less friendly and less relational in the city because there's so many bad guys running around there. You just read the murder rate, much, much higher in the city. And I guess that's per population number. So the murder rate's higher. So now you're going to tell your kids, if you still have them in the city, don't talk to strangers because they're going to be a murderer, a rapist, or a thief. And then what do you need to do? Well, you need to have more police, more tyranny to stop the thief. And on it goes. Now, out in the country, if you're out, say, in rural Nebraska, it's a bad place for a thief to go. Everybody knows everybody. Some stranger comes to town. The sheriff shows up in 10 minutes and says, hey, what's going on here? And if you're a thief, even Barney Fife will throw you in jail with his one bullet.
All right, folks. Barack Obama inaugurated as president of the United States, pro-Marxist, pro-socialist, pro-redistribution of the wealth, anti any kind of inheritance passed on to your children. He wants to tax that to death. So what does all this mean? Well, the Democrats are winning, my friends. The liberals, the socialists are winning in this country. Why is that? Well, according to Professor Olson from Hemline University School of Law, who I referred to earlier on the broadcast, he says now the United States is somewhere between the complacency and apathy phase of Tyler's definition of democracy, with some 40% of the nation's population already having reached the government dependency phase. Actually, I read somewhere that 53% of Americans are on the government dole in some form or another. That may mean a job or what have you, but 53% of Americans get a paycheck from the government. The reference here to democracy is the statement that great nations rise and fall. The people go from bondage to spiritual truth, to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness down to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence, from dependence back again to bondage. And ladies and gentlemen, he's saying that more and more of us are dependent. It's not just the inner city whores that are government dependent anymore, folks. It's everybody. It's the bankers. It's the car manufacturers. It's the farmers. They're all government dependent. As of last year, government dependence, I think, is now practically everybody in the nation. So the last, Dave, the last year or two is looking at more government dependence than we have ever seen, and I think it's gone mainstream now. As Alexis de Tocqueville said, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover they can vote themselves largesse out of the public treasury, which is exactly what's happening. This is the demise of democracy, my friends. The democracy have discovered that they can redistribute the wealth, they can get their hands on all this money and redistribute it every which way they can, and it's become a gigantic Ponzi scheme. A gigantic act of thievery. This is larceny throughout the entire system, institutionalized. Ladies and gentlemen, we're looking at the end of our republic, the end of our democracy. We're at the point of complacency, of apathy, and dependence. We're certainly as dependent as we can possibly be right now on the government for just about everything. And that means we're going to be back to bondage, and this nation will be under, I think, complete bondage within the next 10 or 20 years.
I don't even think it'll take that long. Get the health bill through where everyone has government health insurance or health care. Now everybody's dependent, and now once the government funds something, they control something, i.e. tyranny. When they're controlling your health, when they're actually telling you what you can do, what you can eat, how much you have to exercise, that's complete and total tyranny. That phase is just around the corner. And of course, what the government funds, the government controls. What the government controls, the government can destroy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the root issue here, the root problem, and I'm going to bring the solution out in just a moment. The root problem is that we're a nation of thieves. That's right. As P.J. O'Rourke said, we're a parliament of whores. The trouble in a democracy is that the whores are us. There's nobody else to blame, my friends. You're the one who continue to vote for the redistribution of the wealth. If you're listening to the program, you, as the mass of America, are voting for increased socialism, either through Republicans or Democrats, and have been doing that for the last 100 years. And we have moved, as a nation, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, from selfishness to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependence upon the state, and from a dependence upon the state back again to bondage. It's a round-trip ticket, my friends, and we're just about there. Well, but the solution is very, very, very simple. The solution to the wickedness, this thievery, this massive thievery that's going on all the time, everywhere, through government schooling, through government-sponsored health care, through government-sponsored welfare, et cetera, et cetera. This massive redistribution of the wealth, how do we solve this problem? Teach a simple lesson from the Bible to your families, in your churches for the next 20 years. Here it is. Okay? Just do this. Do this one thing. This is all I'm asking for. This is the solution. Teach this and practice it with your churches and with your families for the next 20 years, here it is, Ephesians 5, let him that stole, that's us, that's all of us, let him that stole steal no more, but let him work with his hands so he have something to give to him who has nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, it's very, very simple. It's very, very simple. Just give to others. Go work. Go work tomorrow. Make $20, peel off $5, and give it to somebody who has nothing. Get rid of government welfare. Ignore government welfare. Don't take government welfare. Instead, go take some of your money, not the government's money, not everybody else's money, but your money, and give it to somebody else. This is the great solution to our problems, my friends. It is not electing Republicans or libertarians or what have you. The real solution is to stop stealing. Stop taking other people's money. And go give money to somebody who's in need. We've been collecting money in our church from the people in our church to give to a poor single mom who's got 5 children she's trying to homeschool. And we're telling the men in our church, go work with your hands. And even if you're unemployed, don't take government welfare. Go get a job. Go work. Make $20 tomorrow and give $5 to this poor woman who needs $5. Give it to others and establish these accountable relationships within your families and within your churches. Folks, private charity is always the solution to socialism. It's always the solution. We should always be giving 3 to 5% of our income to the poor directly. And I think the churches should average 25% to the widows and orphans. That's historical. That goes all the way back to Gregory, the Pope, way back thousands of years ago. And also John Calvin quotes Gregory in his Institutes, and he says, you know, churches need to be given 25% to the widows and orphans. That means if a church is pulling in $1 million, any church in your neighborhood pulling in $1 million a year as their total receipts, $250,000 of it need to be going to the widows and the orphans in that church now, today. Don't wait till government welfare programs are over. Don't wait till Social Security is completely belly up. You do it now. You start right now giving to others. This is the only way we stop this massive redistribution of the wealth scheme, this nation of thievery, and we begin to solve the problems ourselves right now, here and now, today. Ladies and gentlemen, people have been doing this for hundreds of years, for thousands of years. Abigail Adams, when she went off to Paris for a year or two, made sure that the person who was in charge of the estate back in America distributed a little bit of money every month to Widow Jones, Widow Smith, Widow Green. It was in her parting instructions. She was taking her own money, her own family's money, and making sure that the widows in her neighborhood were cared for personally, directly, making sure they didn't starve to death, making sure they had their rent money, et cetera, et cetera. The people took care of each other personally, directly, in personal accountability. And unless we do this tomorrow, and I'm saying, folks, you can solve the problems. Stop whining about Barack Obama and the Marxism, the redistribution of the wealth, and all this. Stop whining about it. Our responsibility right now is to start giving $20, $40, $60, $100 to widows who are in need in our congregations. And churches right now could peel off a quarter of their income, $250,000 a year, to help the widows and the orphans in their congregations and wean them from dependence upon the state right now. We could work with our hands so that we could give personally to those who are in need right now in our own churches, in our own communities, in our own families. This, my friends, is how we're going to solve the problem of tyranny in this country. But until and unless this happens, we'll have nothing but more Marxism, more bondage, more slavery to look forward to in the years to come. Well, but we'll be back in just a moment to talk about how we're going to prepare our children for the future if we're going to see more government, more tyranny in years to come, which is about what we're looking for right now. Be back in just a moment. Stay with me. This is Kevin Swanson. Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com.
That's AMEprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio Program is a ministry of Generations with Vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, talking about Alexis de Tocqueville's comment, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse out of the public treasury, which is exactly what the voters discovered in the last election. They love redistribution of the wealth, my friends. They love to get their hands on other people's money and redistribute that money. Of course, that is the Marxist worldview, and that's the worldview that's been taught in public schools for the last umpteen years. A lot of people believe that redistribution of the wealth is already in the Constitution of the United States, and polls that have been done. But, Dave, what do we do with our children? Our children. I mean, we want to leave our children something better than what we have. My first point was that I think we should teach our children that we should not be socialists. We should not be stealing other people's money. We should stop stealing and go work, get some money, and then give some of that money away to the widow and the orphan. That's, as I see it, the basic, fundamental, foundational solution. That will change the character of the nation from somebody who is selfish, complacent, apathetic, dependent, in bondage, to somebody who is of great courage and believes in liberty and so forth and so on. So that's the way we get back to the kind of character that founded this nation so many years ago.
Well, we didn't get into this situation overnight. It took a few generations to get here. It's going to take at least a generation, I think, to reverse this. I think so. We're going to have to teach our children a taste and appreciation for liberty. And they're going to have to appreciate giving it to other people as well, not only for themselves. And they're going to have to know that the lessons of liberty come with responsibility. In other words, you are going to be a citizen before God, a citizen of heaven living here on earth. You're going to have to be responsible. You're going to have to be responsible to care for the orphan and the widow. You're going to have to be responsible to attend a church where people will hold you accountable, morally accountable, not just for not stealing, but for not coveting. You know, in the movie Patriot, and I know it's fictional, but based on a real character, the Swamp Fox of South Carolina. At the beginning, Mel Gibson asked this question as they're arguing about whether or not they should go to war or fund a war. He asks, why should we trade one tyrant 3,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away? And the point is well stated. It is tyranny that we're objecting to. Whether it be by a king, a monarch, or whether it be by a Congress, liberty can only exist when liberty is appreciated, and liberty only exists or is maximized under the law of God. There is no liberty other than that. Look at all the other civilizations that have ever existed where God's law is not practiced, where God's law is not the basis of law. Liberty is practically non-existent.
Another way to state all of this, Dave, is that you need character to enjoy liberty. Either you'll be governed by God or by God you'll be governed, is what Benjamin Franklin said. Our founders knew that very well. It was a common statement at that time. Without personal, responsible self-government, you would not be able to ever enjoy decent freedom from big government. Big government taxation and regulation of every aspect of your life. And of course, we lost that character, that moral character. And what I'm saying here is let's redevelop it in the hearts and minds of our children and lives of our children. And over time, hopefully, our children will be the next James Madisons, the next Thomas Jeffersons, the next John Adams and Patrick Henrys, who will reestablish a free nation. But only if we in our homes are working over 18 years to develop that really good, solid character that doesn't rob, that continues to work diligently and gives to the orphan sacrificially, and then rebuilds that character such that eventually, hopefully, they have the character to be able to regain a nation that's conceived in liberty.
Kevin, history goes through peaks and valleys. It has times of great upheaval and great setting forth for the future, setting things in place. And we're rapidly now coming to a point where history is going to be made. And so, moms and dads, look at your children. You are raising the next James Madisons. You are raising the next Thomas Jeffersons. If you care about the future, you need to start thinking very intentionally about what lessons you want them to carry forward, because they're going to be those who are the men standing in the gap in history, redefining the future.
See, ladies and gentlemen, we see that the future holds great opportunities for us and for our children and our grandchildren. We haven't given up. Now, granted, the vision of this nation has pretty much dissipated in the minds and hearts of many, many, many people, but not us. Not Dave Buhner, a father of five, and Kevin Swanson, another father of five, who are going to leave a legacy of our children and the values and the principles that we have inculcated in their lives over these 18 years that we're raising them. We actually believe that we could leave our children a legacy of virtue, of godly, biblical worldview, of a biblical paideia of liberty and righteousness and the values that God has listed in His Word and the principles upon which this nation was founded. We actually believe that we have a shot at regaining a nation conceived in liberty one more time. And, of course, that's why I wrote my book, The Second Mayflower. I've mentioned the book many times on the air, but I would really encourage any of you who listen to this program on a regular basis to get a copy of that book, The Second Mayflower, because I believe that we have a shot at retrieving that great vision for our children and our grandchildren. We don't have to leave our children in a land that is completely soaked in socialism, Marxism, homosexuality, abortion, and the ruin of the nuclear family. I think that we can do something better for our children. And I've committed to that. And I'm going to continue to spend the rest of my life inculcating these values into our children and our children's generation and our grandchildren's generation as well. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get a copy of my book, The Second Mayflower, at my website, kevinswanson.com, where you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, right there at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.
Reformation Church is sponsoring Generations Radio because we have a passion for renewing truth and relationships in a lost and lonely world. In this nation, we find the family disintegrating, morality is on the decline, and yet church attendance remains as high as ever. Is the humanist culture impacting the church, or is the church impacting a humanist culture? At Reformation Church, we want to see the church make an impact on culture. That's why we encourage churches everywhere to bring a biblical worldview and a biblical view of ethics back to this culture. As pastors preach the Word of God, Christians everywhere should be taking Old and New Testament and applying it to politics, economics, education, art, and culture. And one more thing, we also want to see relationships renewed. Instead of fragmenting the family by the way we structure our church education and family life, let's reintegrate the family. Let's put a value on church relationships by engaging in hospitality. And let's reintegrate the family by building up relationships within the family. This is our vision at Reformation Church in Castle Rock, Colorado, and for hundreds of other churches throughout Colorado. Visit our website at www.reformationchurch.com.